quick review. We have been talking about the Unio Corporalis. Does that all sound familiar? That is one stage in a three-stage conjunctio process that one alchemist, Gerhard Dorn, had laid out. Jung liked it particularly. Just to review, the first stage is the Unio Mentalis. There's a separation from understanding is separated out from experience. And then there's the Unio Corporalis, where the understanding goes back and reanimates the experience. And that's where most alchemists leave it. And I think one of the interesting things about Dorn is he has this third stage, the Unus Mundus, which is where that union unites with the world. So far in this text, we've been looking at basically the struggles to create a unio mentalis for the ego position to have an understanding that can cope with the onslaught of the experience. And in this last chapter is a unio corporalis theme where that understanding goes back and tries to reanimate the experience. And using as a metaphor the biblical book Song of Songs. Now I worry about this, that it sounds that it's pretty abstract. So what I thought I might do is take a little bit of time, and I brought along a case of about six dreams, which shows these various stages, so you can get more of a practical feeling of what exactly we're talking about when it shows up in dreams, and as it shows up in a case example. I think we do better when we have an example to deal with than just these grand categories. So I'm going to spend probably about a half an hour on that. With that example in mind, hopefully we can go now move on in this chapter, and you'll have some reference so that these concepts don't sound so just structural or so theoretical. So the case I brought along is a case I worked with in Switzerland during my training, and the fellow gave me permission to talk about it whenever I want, so I feel I can do that here. So I'm going to now put a slight detour in here, give you a practical example of this process, unio mentalis, unio corporalis. So when we go back to our chapter in the book, you have some flesh sticking to the bones of the theory we're talking about. It won't take that long, but I think it'll be worth the time. There's a guy, one of my first clients, and he was in his early 30s, and he was fluent in English, and that's how I ended up with him, because they tended to give us the English-speaking people. He had just gotten back from the States, maybe about a year prior. He did a postdoc at the UC Berkeley, and came back, and his marriage, which had started falling apart there, and continued falling apart in the next town they went to do some research in, which was in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. It got worse. When they got back, the marriage basically fell apart. It was one of the nastiest situations you can imagine. His father-in-law was the chief of police of a large city in Switzerland. It was an absolute crook, absolutely dishonest, almost a gangster. And his sister was married to his wife's brother. So here he is in this hellacious divorce with his sister and brother married. In the process, his father-in-law discovered the diary of his sister-in-law, that not anybody mentioned, but a very young girl who was about 17 or 18. So this crook police chief found the diary of this young girl, his daughter, in which she had talked about her sexual experience. He confronted her with it, called her a whore, and she committed suicide. So all this is going on while this poor guy's getting divorced. And the wife sued him for divorce on the basis of mental cruelty. Little problem with that divorce is that all the judges in that town were in the pay of this police chief. this poor guy comes in, you know, having once been this wonder child who got this free postdoc in the United States, to really dealing with flat-out evil. As it turned out, through some of our work and some smart moves on his part, he got the venue of the divorce changed, and that all worked out. Everything did work out. But when he came in, he certainly was not feeling that things were going to work out. And so here's his first dream. I'm telling you this for a particular reason, because it fits right into this series of unio mentalis, unio corporalis. That's something I wanted to do. I don't think I could bring a dream in which clearly shows you the unus mundus. I have often wondered, are there particular dreams that people have before major synchronicity? That would be a unus mundus dream. I can't say that I've been able to identify that. What we can at least do is get some sense of this unio mentalis, unio corporalis. So here's the dream, first dream. My wife and I are coming back from the States. I go see her father for help in getting a job. I can't get to him. Her father is in his office, and there are people all around. I don't have the key to her father's office. I'm mad. My wife tells me to relax. Now, what we made it out was he hated his father-in-law. Yet, in fact, he used the father-in-law's political connections to get a very good job in Switzerland. So that shows his naivete. It shows his unwillingness to fight his own battles and how he really set himself up for this crisis that came, or for part of the complications in this crisis that came. I took the key here as a phallic image in Faust. It's clearly described as a phallus. I've got the text here. Faust says, when he gets a hold of the key, it glows, it shines, increases in my hand. So I took it, that as him not having the phallic strength to deal, the masculine strength to deal with, not seeing the danger that lay ahead and then falling right into it. But the point I want you to think about is that last image, which is why I'm bringing this, because it shows the beginning of this series, Unio Mentalis, Unio Corporalis. But his wife tells, he says, my wife tells me to relax. Now, what do you make of that?
Would that be his anima?
Quite. His anima, definitely. Probably his external wife, too, but was backed up by his anima. Now, what's that anima trying to get him to do? Well, Mike tells me to relax. That means go along with things.
Shane
is the opposite.
Fit to go along with the evil.
Right. See, this is the part of him that is undercutting his own self-interests. And is trying to get him to capitulate to being a victim to the situation.
Well, so that be
instance
of a negative anima?
That's a negative anima. And he is identified with her. This is the point. So I wanted to give you a sense of what it looks like when a man is identified with a negative anima. He is acting out of those feelings, and he's acting out of those thoughts, and they are paralyzing him. He, at this point, had no resolve to fight the situation. He was ready to give up. So you see, the unio mentalis is when you are possessed by an unconscious content, and then you begin to get a perspective on it. So it's a separation. So there's a pretty clear example, both behaviorally and in a dream, of what we mean by the unio mentalis and why it's, we don't see it here, we will see it as we go along, but why it's such an important psychological operation. It's when people are actually living out the unconscious and living out an inferior or unhealthy side of the unconscious, and they're being driven by it, that insight has to come in and take the place of that complex and some perspective gleaned over the forces that are driving them.
So
So you can see, I don't think it's always the case, but in this case, it certainly was the first step in this process for him to begin to question his experience. And my job is to get him to question this experience. Why do you feel this way? Are you sure this is the right perspective you have on this thing? These people are horrible. Why are you giving in to them? You say you say if it goes to trial in the particular canton, it was in Zurich, you're going to lose, but is there no chance of moving the venue? So all that came from me, through my supervisor at that time. Giving him an attitudinal perspective on the feelings and moods that were driving him. That's what we mean by unio mentalis. That's the first step. You'll see it now more clearly in the next dream. We are three, a girl, possibly my boss's secretary, a truck driver, and me. So this one came about 3 months after the first one. We are to transport stuff to a different location. The girl owns a car. The driver and I are going by truck. Both the girl and I want to meet somewhere on the way. However, it proved very difficult to make an appointment on the way to the different location. The way is very long with curves and trees. The truck is fairly big, too. His association to the girl was that she reminded him of a woman who wore her heart on her sleeve and showed her emotionality too easily. What do you make of that? That's classic unio mentalis. You see why I say that? See, he is going one way and his feelings have to go another. The woman here, where before he was dominated by her point of view, here at least she's been excluded out, which was what was necessary. I had to keep him away from his feelings for this part of the therapy. He would start boo-hoo-hooing and I'd have to say stop. This is no time to be crying. You know, if you don't get your act together, you're going to be financially employment-wise destroyed. Because this is a small country, word gets around. So the feelings had to be given their own life, and he and the truck driver, which would be the masculine strength, see, that would be the key from the previous dream, is moving his life forward. But the feelings have to operate separately. So, you know, we live in a world where basically what we hear is how you need to get in touch with your feelings. But I've brought a case along to show you how those feelings were so destructive, I had to keep the guy away from them. And that is the unio mentalis. So the first dream, there was, do you know the word Jung uses for that initial state? Participatio mystique. You all heard that probably. Mm-hmm. There was a mystical participation between him and his unconscious. He and his unconscious were the same. He was speaking that anima. And in the second dream, there was a separation, and he can, in the dream, connect with his feelings later. See, when he connects with his feelings later, that'll be the unio corporalis. But for this part of the journey, he has to go separately from them. And what is needed is masculine strength to get him to complete the task. The next dream is the same month. I was in an Arabian country. Close to some shrubs, a snake suddenly appeared and started climbing me. I knew I had to stay immobile, but was very frightened. Finally, the snake left my shoulder and went into the shrubs. There it was killed by someone who told me it was a poisonous snake. He showed me its head. Another clear unio mentalis. You see why I say that? The snake would be his own poison emotionality. He was filled with revenge feelings. I mean, he was getting screwed. His wife was a complete jerk. She may or may not get out of bed on a certain day. And she whined and complained and just took no part in the marriage at all. Wanted to be treated like a little princess. And he was simply fighting for his rights, and then she went to Daddy, and Daddy put the screws to him. So he was filled with a vengeful state of mind. And that was the snake. And I think the staying still was somewhat practical. He could not act on those feelings again. To have made any rash movements could have been lethal. I think the father was probably even capable. The father was even probably capable of a little murder. I wouldn't put it past him. He drove his daughter to suicide. Why wouldn't he kill somebody else? You know. Now the unio mentalis theme comes up in the snake being killed, which is generally not what you want to do. You don't want to be killing animals in a dream. But at this point, that poisonous emotion had to be killed and its head examined. You see how there is the beginning of a separation between that instinct and the ego. And the head would probably be the meaning of that vengeful feeling, which means at the moment we couldn't indulge in his rage and his desire for... his vindictive desires, but we had to begin saying, how did you get into this mess? That would be the head, as I understood it. And in the dream, that guy who's doing the killing is probably me, who had been saying all along, don't sit in the mire of these feelings, stay clear-headed, make correct choices, and this is a very dangerous time. You're up against real trouble here. But twice we've got an image of unio mentalis, the girl going a separate way, and then the snake being killed, but examined. You could say the essence of the snake was examined. It's not just repressed. It's put aside, and then the deeper psychology of his person, which was behind the fact that he got into this poisonous mess in the first place, has to be examined. So again, see, the separation and understanding, separation and understanding. That's the unio mentalis. It's necessary when the unconscious is overwhelming or when the unconscious becomes destructive. And you can see here how it had become destructive. You can understand why it had become destructive. But still, he can't act foolishly. To the Arabian country, of course, this is way before 9/11. So he associated just the country with many influences, which reminded him of his marriage, the pressure of his in-laws, the suicide, and his sister's marriage to the brother-in-law. Now, the next dream is not directly related to this series, but I need to have you understand this one so you can understand the next one. 3 months later, I was with some peasant men outside a small village in a place like Bali. Bali is a part of Switzerland, French-speaking part of Switzerland, at the foot of a high mountain. It was sort of a cable car. There was sort of a cable car from the valley to the top of the mountain. Suddenly, lights started blinking and parts of a broken satellite dropped to the ground. We started collecting some pieces of it. What do you think that satellite would be about?
Something higher that sees more?
Well, no, it's negative.
Oh, negative.
Yeah. See, first of all, those of you who did the dream analysis, you got a machine. There was a cable car up to the top of the mountain. So it's a mechanical image. That's the first problem. And then there's the satellite, which I took to mean his inflation. He was a wonder boy, just circling the globe. Had done well in graduate school, had gotten this fellowship to the States, was idealized, pretty much had things handed to him. And then, boom, he met the devil. And then that inflation collapsed. And what he was doing then was picking up the pieces of his life. And the other side, the other way I took that cable car, that was his ambition. that he wanted an easy way up life's ladder. And I don't think necessarily, you know, in any dream it has to be a negative image, but given that it was in the same dream as the satellite collapsing, I took it as his desire for easy ascent in life. And then I'm telling you this because the next dream he's walking up the mountain. So he began to see how he put it, how his ambition and his unwillingness to fight led him to put himself at the mercy of this crook, and that there had to be another way to get forward in life. Now, this next dream again repeats the inflation image. And then I think this dream starts to show the beginnings of the unio corporalis. So, see, we've done a separation, and that took about a year of work. Keep him away from these emotions. Examine his attitudes that got him into the mess. And then life starts to reanimate. Once that separation is made, then it reanimates. So this was about 3 months later, I think. No, that was the same month, sorry, same month. Some friends, a girl and I, are looking back to a castle-like building on top of a hill. There were many small windows in the building, but no entrance. It was dark outside. A Jesus monument was in front of this building, like the monument in Rio de Janeiro. Remember this picture you might have seen? I explained to the girl, my brother, and some friends that we were there, that we were actually looking back to the San Francisco Peninsula.
Now what?
That we're actually looking back to the San Francisco.
When he's looking at the castle?
When he's looking at this monument in the castle, it's Rio de Janeiro, but at the same time, it's San Francisco. And the common element between San Francisco and Rio de Janeiro was the falling apart of his marriage. So he's looking at the past, and there's no way of going back. And again, I think we have an image of inflation because the castle on top of the hill was his unrealism, and that part of his life was done. The getting out of the marriage and beginning to recognize how he approached life as a golden boy was done. Now, change of scene, same dream. But we'll see a major difference now. Now we are in, next we are in the mountains. The girl owned a small house close to the road, a road traveled by many pedestrians. See the difference already? There was foot travel here, and there was the cable car in the previous dream. We are talking about how to transport the house to a more isolated space. Now here comes the unio corporalis image. Up in the mountains were the cows, but I was told I could not get up there because the place could only be reached by cable car.
Yeah, somebody else said them. Using somebody else.
Right, he thinks he still does not have the power to pull this off. But why do I call the cows a unio corporalis image?
They walked up there.
Exactly. You see how the he's not there, but you see how the psyche, how the unconscious goes back and places instincts in the very world that he had separated from. So the unconscious is making a move to repopulate life with instincts, with healthy instincts now, to unify daily life and emotions. And we had just been spending about a year separating them. But once that separation occurs, there's a spontaneous reaction on the part of the unconscious to reanimate. That's what we're talking about. It's not something he did. It's something the psyche does. Now, at this point, it cannot be realized. But you can see how the unconscious anticipates. and begins to create the unio, or create the possibility of the unio corporalis spontaneously. And this whole process then of reconnecting with life is a natural one that the unconscious generates. I just think that's amazing. That you can actually watch the thing try to deepen life of its own accord and of its own intentionality. So in this dream, he's still very much in the unio corporalis stage. Unio mentalis stage. The unconscious is leading him towards the unio corporalis, to reinvesting his emotional self in life again, his instinctual self in life again. But he's not quite ready. He still hasn't totally worked through the inflation.
Is there any, are any, there any other books that talk about the unio mentalis corporalis and mundus? So he didn't keep using this idea as he went along in life?
This was a very late idea of his. The only place I know of that he talks about it is Mysterium.
Oh, okay.
Uh-oh. Sorry. Oh, dear. I can send you the CD if you want me. No. I think you'll find it in Mysterium Kinopionis. You'll find it in Edinger's Mysterium Lectures. I even looked in Anatomy of the Psyche, and there's nothing in there about it. This is really one of his last ideas. And it's something I think that, you know, really asks for more research.
Oh, that's right. He didn't. This was Maria. Does she talk about?
Well, I haven't looked at her other stuff, Cindy. I don't know how much she talks about it. Do you have her green book on alchemy that Inner City publishes?
I might.
It might be worth looking in there where she talks about it. We talked about it in Number and Time quite a bit. More, we talked about Unus Mundus. Now,
it just seems like this is such an important
concept. I agree. I agree, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally. And I think it's important for two reasons. One, how it shows the unconscious taking the lead in healing. That cow image is what I would say is an indication of the prospective action of the unconscious. And how it wants life to reanimate. It wants you at some points to pull back and examine, and then when you've examined, it pushes you back into. It wants you to fully experience the emotions which you had to separate from, where you had to separate from previous emotions because they were destructive.
You examine it in the mentalis.
Right.
So in other words, you really have to go through all three.
I don't think you can jump into, you certainly can't jump into the second stage. I have seen, and really, I mean, believe me, I'm still figuring out my own way here, too. I would particularly like to work on the transition of the second to the third. I think that's what's so interesting, how the outer world comes to meet you. What I've noticed with people who, sometimes people who have not gone through the first stage, they'll get a synchronicity, and they don't do anything about it. They don't realize how important it is. And I think the ability to fully respond to a synchronicity probably only comes if you've gone through the first two stages. Previous to that, you know, people tend to think the world's their apple, and sometimes it is. But it's not the apple for the self. And until they've gone through the dark night to realize, I don't want this, I don't want this, I don't want this. I have all these options, but I don't want them. I want a relationship that works. I want a job that's meaningful. I don't care how rich he is. I don't care how much money I'm making. What's the good of that if I'm not happy? To get to that point, you see, that's the first two stages. And then you realize how desperately dependent you are on a synchronicity. And then you respond. But very often, if you're unaware of your unhappiness, you think, well, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. It's just one more opportunity. Where, in fact, it might be the opportunity, and you don't know it. That's the danger, I think, of synchronicity to an immature ego. It just...
So sometimes do these synchronicity things come along and you maybe even recognize that you need to pay attention to this, but you don't quite understand how?
Or you don't quite understand, this is a serious game here. This is your, maybe one of your last chances. You can have many other options, but the option that really fulfills you is those options, those opportunities are few. I say this to people who are politically connected. They think they have many, many opportunities, and in a way they do, but they don't have the opportunities that really satisfy them. So I don't think that's always the case, but I have watched people just throw away opportunities. And I can say I did the same thing. I have to admit that. Throw away chances. Because you don't realize that the story has got a particular next act, and all these other opportunities don't meet the criteria of that act. Now, the next dream, I think, is clearly unio corporalis. I was walking up in the mountains. See? I was walking up in the mountains. In the valleys. Valleys, I think, is where they make Gruyere. You ever had Gruyere? It's the French-speaking mountains of Switzerland. Farmers were harvesting hay. You see, there's a harvest going on now. I was not sure which way to go. But a female friend who was with me asked the farmers where to go. Isn't that beautiful? So you see, he's reconnected with that feminine side that he had to separate from. And not only has he reconnected with her, she's guiding him. And she's guiding him to his natural self. The farmers. He was himself a farmer. And then got a degree in agronomy. Got a PhD in agronomy. The Swiss call those people studied farmers. He was a studied farmer.
Ag econ PhD.
Pardon?
So my husband has an ag econ PhD.
Does he really? Huh. Is he a studied farmer?
He didn't talk.
But was he a farmer as a kid?
Yeah, he grew up as a farmer.
Well, he's a studied farmer.
My father was, because after PhD was in ag econ, so I wouldn't have to go back to the farm. And that's what he was probably doing.
Uh-huh. It has its benefits, but in this guy, he had to go back and recover that native instinctuality and simplicity. So there, I think, that's as clear as I could show you, the unio corporalis. The female was separated, and now she's back. And as we've said, I'm including this last dream to make a point that we always mention, but I don't think we can say it too much, is that this is a cycle. It's going to start over again, and here's the next dream, which is the beginning of a new cycle. I am with my relatives in a forest. They wanted to talk to me, but I avoided this. I was embarrassed by their presence and tried to find my own way. See, another unio mentalis is required, separating himself out from his parental values. And he will go again. I think at this point, he terminated. He had pretty much accomplished what he had come for. But just to show you how the unconscious then starts the whole thing all over again, on a new level of where you're identified with the unconscious, separate you, and then bring you back to it. Anyone is divorce battle.
Do we have to get a change of that to Finn?
I'm trying to remember. I think he stayed on. He had an academic post.
To get the divorce because of all the judges.
Oh, yes. They moved it to a different, to Canton. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he would have got crucified in Canton where he was. Well, hopefully that puts some flesh on this abstraction that we've been talking about. Unio mentalis, unio corporalis. Sorry, I don't have a unus lundus dream. I'm not sure I've ever actually seen one, but I'm keeping my eye out for it.
Well, the synchronicity is the dream in a way.
In a way, you could say it is. Uh-huh.
Well, what would your idea of the, you know, the last dream be for him?
I think this was the last dream for him. In fact.
Yeah, but I mean, to complete what you said, you've never seen.
But you said it's united with the world.
Yeah.
Is there any more that you can say about it?
Well, that's when, yeah, that's, and Carol's point might be the final one here, that in the unio, in the unus mundus, the dream comes to you from the outside.
So maybe just getting the divorce.
Well, I would say perhaps getting the divorce, if he had stuck out analysis longer, and I, you know, he was 30 years old. He needed to be out in life, so I certainly didn't encourage him. But he may have begun to question his employment. And it still came from that connection from the father-in-law. And I don't think he was particularly, it was, you know, he had this job in an academic farming institute, and he did this modeling of factors, you know, with computer analysis. He was bored. He may have sought after some sort of work that was more true to his nature. And then what the unus mundus is when you are looking for something and it comes to you. When the outer world operates to bring you your next step. I told you that example of the woman and the boy who called from Oregon. Some of you have heard that, I'm sure. Should I tell it again?
Mm-hmm.
And this was just, this is the clearest unus mundus I've ever seen. It freaked me out. Some of you have heard this, bear with me. I was seeing a woman who had dreams of being gang raped. And over about a 6-month period, that turned into the dream. It would occur like every two weeks or something, every 3 weeks. Not, you know, just a persistent, annoying thing. And then they turned into the dream of one guy raping her. And then that turned into a dream of her high school sweetheart wanting to be with her. And the story came out that she was in love, at puppy love, whatever you want to call it, at 16, and her mother, who was crazy, said, if you don't stop seeing this boy, I'm going to commit suicide. And so she broke it off. They graduated from high school, and she never heard or seen from them since. And so I said, obviously, there's something unfinished in that relationship that's persecuting you. And she was psychologically sophisticated enough, I could say, and I think there's probably a projection you have on him that you're not aware of that is working against you, and that's what these rape things are about. Let's try to find out what you're projecting onto him. And she said, well, I'm going to try to find him. So she was raised in the Near East Side, and she asked all around, and nobody had heard or seen from him from high school, since high school. He left town after high school. And she came back and she said, I looked around and I couldn't, nobody knows where he is. And I said, well, don't worry, you know, we have seen that the dreams have evolved, the gang rape into the singular rape, to him, they will continue, and we'll hear from the dreams what the projection is. She came back the next hour, white as a ghost. She said, guess who called? After 24 years from Oregon. And he said, I won't give him the real name. He said, hi, this is John. We got some things to talk about. She said, yeah. He said, I'll be in town next week. Can we talk? She said, sure. See, where that, I expected that to occur inside, but it occurred outside. So when the things you're expecting in a dream occur, but they occur in reality, and when that that encounter with reality is a continuation of your journey, when you need that event to continue your journey in relationship to the world, you see, when you're coming out of yourself into the world, that's what Jung means by unus mundus. That's a synchronicity. Synchronicity is a unus mundus. She then realized that what she was projecting onto him was his intelligence. And she felt very unintelligent. And she went back to college. So that college was the completion of the inner, that phase of the inner process. She had some other stuff to work on. And that was putting something in time and space. So when time and space come to meet you, that's a unus mundus. That's a synchronicity. The dream occurs outwardly, and it's not just a dream, it's not only a dream, it's at the same time an opportunity for the practical in this world task that would represent the fulfillment of what you are attempting to complete in your life. So opportunity comes to you. That's how I think of it. And it's just the thing you need. Now, my question was, you know, do people in those moments have typical dreams? And I've not been able to substantiate a common element. But Carol might be right that is the dream, stupid. So just take it for what it is. But you see what people have to go through to get there. Holy smokes.
If you don't get the synchronicity, you can't come to the synchronicity.
The same thing. And I think what is so vitally important is that there is an inner need to do something. And there is an outer place for that to be done. And without that outer place, you can develop yourself forever. But if you don't have that outer place, that development stays as a possibility. And the outer world has to be there to give you the concrete opportunity to take that step. So it's when inner potentiality and outer opportunity come together that individuation can really continue.
And when you have those opportunities and you don't take it, that's the sad.
That's deep doo-doo. You get second chances, but you don't get an infinite amount of second chances. I told you my physical therapist story. I just think that's the most tragic and classic example of somebody who was brilliant and refused to develop it. She even said to me, I think you're coming into my life was to help me with this. I said, sure, I'll help you. And then she pissed it away. She was more interested in being chased by rich guys than looking at herself. And she's dead. Didn't make 40. Yeah. But a terrific gift in the mind-body sphere. I almost think the stronger the gift, the less you can get away with. So if you're wishing for creativity, beware what you're wishing for. Because it comes at an enormous price. Because I think ultimately, I'm getting off a little bit, but ultimately, as I've talked about with this timey stuff, this is not just a personal process. You are, the self wants you to be a citizen in the cosmos. The self is concerned about evolution and wants you to be one link in the evolution of humankind, cultural evolution of humankind. And it wants that with all the ferociousness of nature. And if you balk, this is what Christianity doesn't get, how viciously intense that drive is for individuation. If your gift is to serve the development of the community.
So the unus mundus then is when you actually are doing something for the collective.
Well, I think in the unus mundus, your aptitude and the opportunity are one. And the beauty of it, if you can stick it out long enough, is that, see, that possibility is something you're doing for something inside yourself. And it feels, by doing it, you are nourishing yourself. And when that outer opportunity comes along, that just gives you the place to do that. So when you're doing that act, you are filling yourself. And at the same time, you are giving to the world. There is no longer a breakdown between selfishness and generosity. The serving of yourself and the serving the community are the same thing. And if you don't mind me saying, that's another thing Christianity doesn't get. See, goodness is not a should. It's an is.
Is a what?
It's an is.
Oh, okay.
People, when they have had the guts to look at the false stuff in themselves, which would be the unio mentalis, and get a perspective on it, and then follow the lead of the unconscious. See, that's pretty much an act of will. That's the hero myth. That's symbols of transformation. If you can look at and be honest about and confess and recognize your nonsense and stop it, that's what AA is about, then see, the unconscious takes the lead and leads you back into the reanimating the pain that you have felt from the separation with liveliness. Your emotions come back. Life seems to be joyful again. Where the unio mentalis is kind of not so much fun. But that doesn't mean you have the opportunity to put into the world what you want to do. And that what you want to do is a very specific thing that has come to you through this unio mentalis process. But you still need the opportunity in the world to receive what you want to give. And, you know, yeah, you got to make a living to get paid for it. But I think when you are living life that way, which is what individuation is, you are, your potentiality, the opportunity from the world are the same, merge, and in doing that, you both give to yourself and you give to the world in the completion of what your work is. And that convergence of those various factors, inner, outer, giving, and receiving from yourself, there's no longer a felt split. You don't feel that you're diminishing yourself by doing the work. You feel that you're enhancing yourself by doing the work, and you are enhancing yourself by doing the work. But hopefully that puts some flesh on this schematized. And just to give you a sense how very important it is. Yeah, Mariel.
If I may, this is sort of interesting to me. This morning is the day I have a clean light, okay? And if what you just brought up is sort of the last few times when she comes, I sort of think maybe I shouldn't have her come so often or something. And sometimes I think it's my thoughts that are out there, but I'm in the process of my life and my dreams of cleaning up, you know, getting things together in order. And it's like, In my son room, I have like a Christmas tree with some stickers, and she always complains about it. It's sort of a negative, you know. Just don't bump into it, you know. But she, and today I had an incense in the sun room, and she shut the door. I can't have that. It bothers me. And I was getting ready to go upstairs and take a shower, and all of a sudden I thought, my God. And it wasn't a grudge or angry, but I just went down and said, well, if you're finished here in the family room, I'll go ahead and open the door so it airs out, because then she'll have to back in the coffee in there. And I went up to take my bath and get dressed, and I came down and quiet she left. And she left me a note that this won't work any longer. And I've had it for quite some time, and it's interesting, I thought, and she's a single mom, you know. So it turns four times a mom up, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, so I thought, well, I should call her and ask. I left a message, if there's something we need to do to work this out, we can do that. I didn't say I honor what you are doing. I guess I could have. I didn't do that. I was thinking more of taking care of her, which is interesting because my dreams have been about me a little bit too busy. And so then just sitting here, now it's really clear that that's almost like a synchronicity in a sense, because it's like I did clean my house. There's something mentally and emotionally didn't feel good when she came.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Make sense? We have a little bit of time. Let's dive back in here. Last time we went through the text, Song of Songs, I won't repeat that. Basically, it's just this back and forth, back and forth. We are on 363.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. I'm going to just start and recap what we did last time very briefly to give us a little momentum here. 363, be turned to me with all your heart and do not cast me aside because I am black and swarthy. We talked about that. Because the sun hath changed my color and the waters have covered my face and the earth hath been polluted. I just spaced out here. I've been polluted and defiled in my works. First thing we talked about, somebody raised a question. There is a slight shift in gender, because we're going to be talking about the woman as meaning and the man as body. I mentioned that I think that's because we are working with a paradigm that's in evolution. And I referred to this picture, so I brought this along if you want to pass it around. In Egypt, you have the same reversal. The sky is feminine and the earth is masculine. And this is, I said it wrong actually. This is last time. This is Nut as Geb, and these are wind spirits. I just think it's a beautiful picture. So that you have to kind of change your mind around a little bit, because usually we talk about the body as feminine. You were going to be using the body as masculine. But I think that's because we're working with a text that's overthrowing a paradigm. And that previous configuration, that's what it is in the patriarchy. And we're trying to move past that to something else.
Well, when we're talking about the body in these few pages, we're not talking about the earthly body. Is that correct?
Yes, we are. But
at times she makes it clear that we're not.
Well, she. This is an intuitive vision of the body, and it takes place in the beyond, not here on Earth.
So it's a symbolization of the body, which eventually through evolution would become the concrete body.
Yeah,
the symbol evolved.
In Thomas's case, it remains intuitive because he can't deal with the problem of the body. So when the text says body, I think it could mean literal, the physical body. It could also mean the emotions. She's going to take us on a tour of different possible meanings of the body. So if it's not clear by the time we're done, holler. But I think we'll be addressing that question. We talked about the blackness as being a result of too much consciousness, too much patriarchal consciousness. And hope that makes sense. Does that sound familiar to everybody? I won't repeat it then. Let me make two more points, and then we'll take a break. So this is still kind of review. She refers to the quote from Joel. Now, therefore, that's footnote 7, third line after the quote on 363, which we kind of skimmed over last time. Now, therefore, saith the Lord, be converted to me with all your heart. And what she wants to make of that is that phrase is used by the Shulamite. Remember the text now. By the Shulamite, and that suggests that the Shulamite is an image of God. So what we're dealing with here is not only the Shulamite, but the feminine, the part of God that patriarchy doesn't symbolize. Is that okay for everybody? That might be a place to stop. Let me stop. Why don't we stop there? We'll come back with Moses, because I did some research on Moses and Miriam. Let's have a stretch.